From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome in to Hour 2 of the Civic Media Spotlight. First up, we'll go to Mino and the Mayor, where Jim and John this week were joined by Andy Van Handel from Freedom Freefall, an organization that takes veterans skydiving.
Coming to Northeast Wisconsin live from the Civic Media Studios and featuring TV and radio broadcast veteran John Mino, along with the City of Green Bay's longest-serving mayor, Jim Schmidt. This is Mino and the Mayor. Here are your hosts, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back on a beautiful Monday morning here in downtown Green Bay. 74 already, 75 in Appleton, 72 in Oshkosh. And just to go back, important things today, National Eat Your Vegetable Days. These two guys don't have a problem with that. Garbage Man Day, we've changed that to sanitation engineer type thing.
Right.
But you've done it where you were the actual guy doing it.
I guess you're listening on the way in here, but when I was first elected, people were like, he doesn't know enough about the city, so I tried to spend a day with every department. Those garbage guys, they weren't very nice to me. Because the way they did that, this is before we had automated garbage pickup, right? 2003-04. And so one guy would drive for an hour and the other two guys would throw the garbage and then you'd switch. But I didn't have my CDL license, so I was just on the back of the truck for 8 hours. And they took me to an area that some areas, you know, everything's in plastic bags. And we went to an area where lift off the cover and there are fish heads in there and I got the dry heaves. And but I learned, and that really motivated me to get automated garbage pickup. And I was sore. But anyway, yes, today we honor all the sanitation engineers.
And especially the guys that used to do that had that job. God bless them.
Rotator cuff. I mean, that was a tough job. Think about that. And you're not supposed to put, there were limits. Nobody ever adhered to them. But sometimes there'd be a construction job and there'd be brick or shingle in there. You know, that stuff's heavier than hell. So I did not enjoy that day.
So let's talk a little bit more. We're talking about skydiving. We're talking about a great thing. Is there still a chance for people to be able to jump in Pulaski or at your place? Or is it full?
That is full.
It's full.
Okay.
But you do this annually.
Every year. It's full. But I will say this from past events. Anybody that wants to come out, check it out.
Yes, absolutely. That's what I was going to say.
It seems like every year... I mean, I don't know how it was in Pulaski last year because I'm down at the Madison event, but every year it seems like we have jumpers that say they're coming and then don't.
Right.
Madison, we have like four or five jumpers that have jumped in past events, so they were kind of at the bottom of the list. But I called all of them and said, come on out. You never know. We actually had a veteran that we selected this year. She texted me and said, hey, I have a friend who's a veteran. Is she going to be able to go? I said, well, it's full, but
you're right.
Come on out. You never know how the day's
going
to go.
But what I was going to say, too, is if anybody, I mean, we can talk about it all day long here, but if somebody's thinking about going, I really would encourage them to go out to one of these days.
100%.
And that's what I was asking beforehand. Go out this year and then do it next year because seeing it is a lot different than us talking about it.
Right. We encourage everybody to bring their friends, their families to watch them jump. I mean, because... It helps them. It helps with their nerves because they're real quiet when they get there.
I know.
And then they go up in the bird and they're a little more quiet because it's getting real. And then when they hit the ground after they land.
The emotion, the family, the whole thing. Absolutely.
I was going to say, they're a little quiet and then they get in the plane and they're a little bit more quiet. And then when you open the door and hear that wind, they're really quiet.
Yeah, they are.
I mean,
that is loud.
That does vary quite a bit. It does. Like, I remember a few years ago, it wasn't Veterans Day, but the whole write-up, how you doing?
Yeah.
She's totally cool. I'm cool. As soon as that door opened, there was the most blood-curdling scream I've ever heard in my life.
Really?
Yeah. But when the wind's going, she's yelling, no, I hear go. It's loud, you know?
Right.
Has anybody ever, like, simply death grip not go?
So with our airplanes, there is a point of no return where it's actually more dangerous to try to climb back into the aircraft.
Okay.
But I have had two people out of over 2,000 tandem skydives. I've only had two back out.
So wow.
No, we're not.
I agree. Once you climb out, you got to let go. But we had a guy that just didn't go out there. And it's like the guy's like, that's cool. Go sit down.
We'll just, yeah, there's, but, and there's
Then the plane lands. Everybody's like, "Boo!"
They didn't do that.
They just took a walk of shame when you get out of the plane with your shoes still on.
They didn't do that. I mean, there's like a liability legal thing. If they're saying no way, I don't want to go. I mean, then
you got it.
We can't take them.
Right, you got to honor that. Yeah. So we're talking with Andy Van Handel, and then Chris Vincent.
Yeah, I screwed you up on it now too.
Yeah, I know. But Van Handel's a lot easier than Vandenhoevel.
Somewhere along the line, you lost the der. Vander, yeah, right. Van Day, Vanda.
Anyway, and these guys just do a great service for veterans, and they take them parachuting, skydiving, and do it at, what, 3 or 4 different locations? Or you got Madison, Pulaski?
Two
now. Yeah. Okay, you had other ones. Okay, they come up, and we're just talking about how meaningful it is to the veteran. I mean, it's almost a little bit of a cleansing or a breakthrough, and now I can talk about more things. Yeah. And I think that's just very cool.
And that's
a
good
point,
Chip, because the thing I've learned in dealing with veterans with post-traumatic stress, not everyone fits in the exact same box.
Correct.
There are a lot of different ways. They're like, we're going to have a guy and talk about, the guitars for vets type program. There's so many different ways that you can't just sit in a room and just cure somebody by therapy. Maybe you can, but man, it seems like veteran to veteran type entities such as this play such an important role.
Yeah, and WHO has got so many, they got dozens, probably a dozen different programs.
Yeah,
and
tons.
Scuba, and Vinny does a lot of stuff with the fishing stuff. And what I found through Freedom Freefall, and I cannot stress this enough, a lot of it isn't, okay, I got to come out and make the jump. We actually have one veteran that was up in the plane a few years ago and decided this isn't for me, but he stuck around all day because of the camaraderie.
Yep. Absolutely.
That camaraderie they had in the military for most of these guys isn't there, and they're still trying to find their way through civilian life. I mean, military life is very structured. It's you're here at this time, you're there at that time, yada, 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 yada. You know, and the camaraderie that we can offer through skydiving or the scuba stuff, or the Ruck March. March is 1,500 people with all one mission in mind.
Is that on Veterans Day again this year?
Or that weekend, yep. Yeah. I'm not sure the exact date.
I think it's the 9th this year.
Yeah.
Oh, the 9th. Maybe I can make it this year then. Because normally it's on the I'm doing a show on the 11th.
Oh, okay. Yes.
It's incredible.
How many miles is it now? It's shortened, right?
It was 16.8.
What is it now? It's going to be longer again this year.
Oh, do you know how many steps I walked the other day? 16,000.
No, that's
16,000, Jim.
He does it. You know,
new world record.
That's bike.
What?
True. What?
No, you can't.
But you told me that.
Well, that was a different day.
Okay. When you take your bike.
That was the day I got the ticket. Okay. Oh, by the way, did I tell you I called her again?
Oh, good. So you guys, look, we want to talk about you and your program, and I just think it's great what you're doing, but we're going to digress for 1 second. Johnny finally got a bike. We've been talking about it. We've been on the show for almost a year. Almost a year. A year to this 26 is our 1 year anniversary.
Is this in lieu of his manual labor job?
Yeah, totally.
Nobody will hire me. That's biggest scam going out there right now is construction companies and home builders saying things are delayed because of the workforce, because they can't get the manpower. That is their biggest excuse. I don't know why they're doing it. They're perpetrating it, and it is a lie.
So, John,
I have every home builder that comes through here, I have offered my services to work manual labor for
them. So they're all wrong. The electricians are wrong. The construction guys are wrong. But they all say, well, John, you're a nice guy, but, and he it hasn't sunk in yet that.
But that's why I'm walking 16,000 feet every day.
60,000 feet.
Or, I mean, steps.
Which is about the same. Right. Anyway, he finally got a bike. And I want to defend him on this one. This one he's right on. He bought a bike finally. Used bike at Green Bay Collective, which is they kind of take
great
bikes.
Place for
those guys are awesome. Yeah. They're volunteers. They fix bikes and then they sell them to just help their nonprofit. Well, anyway, he had all these excuses. Finally, he goes there and buys a bike, and he takes his bike and he goes on the Fox River Trail. And the Fox River Trail in on the city deck, it's free, right? You can ride your bike, but then when you get to Poulier, there's a huge, huge sign.
I didn't even notice that.
It's a huge sign. That's just he drives like Mr. Magoo too. But anyway, he misses the sign, and the lady's like pulls him over.
Well, I was coming back from right, Depeer because right, it started okay. in the Depeer
whatever,
area.
Whatever, there's signs all over. But anyway, the lady's like, "Do you have your license?" And he goes, "No. How do I?" get one. And she says, it's over there at the kiosk. He goes, well, I'll go buy one right now. She goes, well, the kiosk isn't working. Here's your $25 fine plus $10 for, I don't know, lipping off or something.
So no, anyway,
you got a $35 fine, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So anyway, she
said, and I think he should fight it.
I'm trying to. So I called the lady again Friday and she said, is this John? She says, yeah. She says, I think it's going to be waived. We're going to let
it
you
better
know.
Better be.
Yeah.
So she thinks that's really not fair that right. He couldn't buy a license because the kiosk wasn't working and yet she gave him a fine. I mean, come on.
True. You guys with me?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yep. Thank you. But anyway, we have a back to the manual labor. So I'm doing all this stuff to get in shape and nobody will, I'll carry 2x4s. I'll frame, I'll wheelbarrow. I'm phenomenal at wheelbarrowing.
Words out.
Concrete, bricks, conduit, pulling cables.
Concrete, what does that mean?
Just not doing any high work. I don't like high work. What?
I used to do,
you know what? For my house that we built, I did the, I worked with Mark DeClean. You know Mark DeClean? He's a great bricklayer in this town. And I was his, I can't think of the name, the guy that mixed up the muck. Mixes up the stuff.
And hand him the
tender. I was a mason tender.
And how come you're not there? How come no one's hired you?
I think Mark knew I was too busy to do other stuff.
I think Mark in the whisper campaign is like, stay away from
I don't think so. I've put my body out there.
He's a drunk.
For people to, oh my God. Where did that come from?
I'm sorry.
Panama Red. No. What's going on here? Todd. Control your people. Anyway, well, we're going to let you guys out of here.
All right, so you guys, I want to get back. So
Andy and Vinny, you got 2 minutes.
Okay, not only the jump for the veterans that you honor, but let's talk about the camaraderie of the people coming and honoring them, and let's talk about more of the
These guys will come in, and they're looking for, they're missing the camaraderie, and they're also missing the adrenaline that they had in the military. Right. And jumping out of a plane, if that doesn't light your fuse, I don't know what's going to do it for you. But.
Yeah, you'll see if people come out to the events. Madison is July 13th. The Pulaski event is July 20th, starting at 8 a.m. You'll see the transformation with these guys are struggling on the ground. And like when they get down to the ground,
Do you got a website, really cool thing to website go or something we can look at?
HooaWisconsin.org.
Okay, great.
HOOHA, right?
WI.org.
Yeah, HOOA.
Thanks for doing this, you guys.
Thanks very much, guys.
Pleasure.
Great having you guys on. Thanks for having us on. What you do for our veterans. We're going to set a quick break. Back right after this.
Mino and the Mayor is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WISS and WGBW weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight for this week, we go to Busted Pencils. Dr. Tim and Teacher Hallie tackle the significance of Juneteenth in today's educational landscape.
Oh, just the two of us, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education, 855-752-4842. Oh, well, you know, hey, we said
you can make anything into a rock song.
Hey, best music anywhere. We say it all the time. Busted Pencils, you know, you're going to get some type of surprise. Juneteenth, though, question, you know, if today, well, you know, if we were still school in session, what would the students, the teachers, the schools, the school districts be doing around this day? And we kind of framed it as this potentially problematic in 2024, because there's a story here that might make some people uncomfortable. Is it Emancipation Day? Is it Freedom Day? These are questions right away, right? That somebody could go, well, wait a minute. We can have hot dogs. I'll even allow the drumming African drummers to come in and do a little celebration, but we are not going to be talking about the specifics of Juneteenth. Why did it take so long for the message to get to the slaves? Why did it take so long for us to actually have a holiday around Juneteenth? Because those topics, if we start getting into those types of discussions, Teacher Hallie, somebody might be offended.
Yeah. And I think it's what's wild to me is that, like, it's got to be deeper than uncomfortable and offended. You know what I mean? Like, for people to want to get in positions of power and to, like, eliminate this type of conversation, this type of critical thinking, this type of conversation is just so deep to me. Like, it is to me, like, it's just an attack on, like, the profession of education and, like, really an attack on, like, the children's minds and, like, the capacities of, like, where you could go with their minds. Because, again, like I said, I just keep sitting here thinking about how this has so much to do with taking away the autonomy of teachers. And people will be like, well, I don't want my teacher to have autonomy. Yeah. You know, I'm like, well, why not? Because they're professionals. Yeah. You know, like, we should want them to be able to take a conversation and route it wherever it needs to go. It actually makes me think about a shout out to a teacher I won't name because I think this was fear inducing, but my child's second grade teacher, and it was around Martin Luther King Day. So related, but not related, but essentially a conversation about racism came up, you know, with 7 and 8 year olds. Okay. Right. And students in the class shared about how they had experienced racism in their life. And so my daughter came home, who is white, and she was just, like, beside herself, you know, like, she's very empathic, where she's just like, why would people do that? That is awful, Mom. You know, and then she's like, I was crying in class. But to me, I was like, what an amazing conversation. Mm-hmm. As I'm listening to my, I don't remember if she was 7 or 8 at the time, my 8-year-old be able to tell me about what racism is in a very, like, developmentally appropriate 8-year-old way. Mm-hmm. I was like, dang, that teacher knows how to navigate this conversation. So just being who I am, I emailed her being like, thank you so much. Like, this is why I send my children to public school. Those type of conversations that just come up that you can navigate professionally is amazing. Mm. And her response back to me was like, do you mind sending this or, like, forwarding it on to the principal? Because I'm getting, like, my principal is, like, basically telling me I need to send an apology to all the parents, a clarification about why I talked about it, because she's so scared that the school board will find out and then they'll be upset. You know, so that teacher was, like, mortified and, like, walking away being scared versus, and then I did find out later from talking to other parents and then encouraging them, like, email her. You know, but it was, and they were excited that the conversation happened, but I'm just like, this is the environment that teachers are teaching in of, like. Well,
so imagine, imagine then today, Juneteenth, if we were in school, and I was saying, when you're sitting there and what you described though, with your daughter in that though, is exactly I can see the other parent going, how dare you send my daughter home in tears, feeling bad about being white? What in the heck are you doing with? Right. No,
I'm interrupting you because what's wild to me is that, like, I get our, I think we're so conditioned now to think about, like, the quote unquote other parent, but I'm telling you that that class of, you know, random class of probably 30 second graders, there weren't parents that were like, lock her up, you know, like, nobody complained.
Right.
You know, so that's where I just get like, why does our brain go to like, but we need to be careful about the what if situation of the one parent that might say something or might find out, you know, I'm like, it's taking away the professionalism and a true public education for kids.
And that is what you're explaining though, is that's the reality of today is that how much, I know how much can be stifled without actually any harm being done or anything like that. Yes. Right. You know, it's Educators Amplified Night, Teacher Hallie, Dr. Tim Slecker and Anya on the boards. Another text from Sherry from Oregon. It needs to be uncomfortable, but told right on. I mean, that's the reality here. We got to do that. Yeah, and just think about that, you know, because the reality of the potential that none of the parents were associated with you and your daughter and all that, like, you're all fine with that, but it doesn't matter anymore because there is a story out there of a teacher who, you know, got put into the wet dungeon with the rats and made to hang out there for days as their punishment for daring to make somebody. But the story gets out that this did happen, right? And so then the anxiety response on that then is to catastrophize way above and beyond the reality that will typically go. And then you stifle yourself. And people, you know, people say, well, what's the problem? You don't, if it's true, you don't have, it's like, no, you understand this silences people very powerfully without actually doing any type of harm. I remember that I would my first couple of years teaching have some, you know, it's like, you're going to get in trouble, Tim. You're going to get in trouble. And I kept wondering, I'm like, how do you know that? Where is the evidence that trouble has occurred? And it must have been so horrible because we have no evidence of anybody having ever gotten in trouble. But the fear of getting in trouble has created such a backlash that people go, hey, you know, and I would even say, I'm like, when did this person get in trouble? What happened that was so horrific that the rest of you now have decided that we're going to actually warn people about what happens when they get in trouble? Juneteenth, Busted Pencils, Educators Amplified, Fully Leaded Education Talk, all those things, Educated Educators Talking Education, 855-752-4842. Do a little bit more Juneteenth, but hey, the other thing though too, if you're an administrator out there and you're hiring a consultant, we want to talk to you.
Busted Pencils is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday evenings at 6 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Welcome back to this week's Civic Media Spotlight. Pete Schwabe of Nightlight is up next. This week, he invited Emil and John of the musical group 7,000 Apart into the studio. They talk about touring in Sweden and how they're now back in Wisconsin for the summer. Additionally, the duo play a song live in studio called Slide.
Welcome back to a Wednesday edition of Nightlight, coming to you live from Madison, just off beautiful State Street here. Aaron Zommer is sitting in for the vacationing Conrad Krieger tonight. And we will have, hopefully, Kayla Kelly in just a few minutes. I saw this article, and this cracked me up. Jeff Daniels almost did not do Dumb and Dumber. He he thought the toilet scene would kill his career, and his agents were, like, pleading with him not to do the movie because they thought that would tarnish his reputation as a serious actor. But he wanted to work with Jim Carrey so bad, he stayed with it. And Jim Carrey actually said, if you commit to it, it'll be great.
Well, of course. You got to commit to the bit.
He committed to it. And he, despite the fact that he destroyed apparently several toilets during filming, it did not destroy his career. So, love reading stuff like that. Love movie trivia like that. Okay, we are going to pivot here and go to our scheduled guest who has joined us now. I'm very excited to welcome this burgeoning actress to the program, and her name is Kayla Kelly. Kayla, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's so great to have you. How are you doing tonight?
I'm great. Thank you.
Are you in the UP?
I am.
Nice. How do you do that? How do you, when I first heard about you, it was like a year ago, I'm like, you know, how do you do that? How do you make an acting career living somewhere so remote? And I live in the Marinette area. It's not exactly a hub of activity, so I get it. But how do you do that? You must travel a lot, right?
I travel a lot, yes. Yeah. I put so many miles on my car, and you know, I do a lot of traveling, mostly in the Midwest, but it's definitely, it's fun. It's fun to get around, get out by myself, and makes me feel very independent. So it's cool, you know.
Okay. So I was reading about you, and you have a really interesting story. I don't know if I saw this on IMDb Pro or on your website, but you had a child at 18, which will derail most people's career plans when they want to go into show business, but it didn't stop you. Tell us about that challenge in your life and how cool it is that you still went ahead and became an actor.
Well, I've always wanted to be an actor ever since I was a kid. It kind of all started when I saw my uncle doing theater productions, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's my uncle, but it doesn't really look like him. And I thought it was so cool, and I wanted that to be me. I thought it was so neat. He could just be whoever he wanted, whenever he wanted. And so the bug, I guess you could say, hit me when I was little. And I started doing theater as a kid. And, you know, then I graduated high school and got married right away, had my daughter. And as you do, you put your family first. And that, you know, sort of became the, that's real life. And I went to college and, you know, I worked 11 years for an ophthalmologist. I had basically a whole life. And I also have my son in there too. And, you know, I had the whole life, the whole American dream, I guess you could say. And, but it's just like, I got to the point where I thought, you know, I really miss doing that. That was something I really had wanted to do. And it kind of became something that was just a dream, honestly, just like something that was like, yeah, right. I mean, that would be so cool, but it's how's it going to happen here? I live in the middle of nowhere. And it was really a high school friend that was putting on a production locally in my hometown that some friends of mine encouraged me to go try out for the play. And I did. And it really was kind of the theater group that kind of uplifted me and gave me all this confidence again that I had lost over not doing theater for so many years and all that stuff. And I like to, I mean, I kind of credit those people because if it wasn't for that family feeling that, you know, that uplifting, theater people are unlike other people. That's all I can say about
that. Totally.
You would know, you know what it's like.
Yeah.
Theater people are a really amazing group of people. So I really got that confidence. And not long after I did that play, because I got cast as the lead female in that play was Frankenstein. There was an opportunity for a film that was actually being made right here in my hometown also. And from someone I knew back in the day from theater also. So it kind of just worked out. And from then I just haven't looked back.
Wow. So talk a little bit about too, like when you're doing community theater, those people aren't trying to become professional actresses, typically. They're doing something for fun. And we have a great community theater in Marinette. My daughter has been part of it since we moved back here, and it's her community. And now she's about to go to college. And I'm like, you know, you're going to move on from people who do this for fun to people who want to make a career out of it. Was that strange being around? And what was their reaction when you told them, no, I want to go do this. I want to be a professional actor. Were they like not know how to talk to you then or what?
I will say, no, not so much. I think people were really stoked about it. And they were kind of like, you know, you always wanted to do this. That's so cool. And you know, don't forget us when you make it big, which I have. But you know what I mean?
Right.
No, they were actually really supportive about it. And sometimes I'm trying to help some of my community theater friends get involved with working in film as well. So the more the merrier.
That's fantastic. When you talked about doing that movie in your hometown, what was the movie?
Well, the first film I worked on was called Nowhere, Michigan.
Okay.
You can find it on Amazon Prime. My scene actually got cut from the film because it was, as you may not, maybe many people wouldn't know about this, but a lot of scenes get cut from films if they're not really important to the story and they have to cut for time. So my first scene ever was one of those scenes, and it was kind of a bummer, but the director was a super cool guy, and he sent me the scene. I got to keep it for my reel. And I worked with an actress who has now been in Emmy nominated and Oscar nominated films in that scene. So it was like getting to watch like the actual careers of some of the people I worked with on my first film and seeing what they've done now. It's incredible. She was just on American Horror Story in this past season.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it's super cool to see that. You know, you never know what's going to happen with the people you work with. And that's why I always say to treat everybody like everybody should be treated with respect on a film set, no matter what their job is, because you never know.
Absolutely. It's funny. I had a script set in the UP that we were going to shoot in Minnesota a couple years ago. And I was like looking for other films that I could get ideas for locations and all that kind of stuff. And I stumbled across Nowhere in Michigan. And I'm like, oh, my God. And on Prime, probably. And what was that like? What, like, I've shot a film before in a small town. What is that experience like? And what was your experience like that? Because in my experience, people like rally around you and they want to have fun and they can't wait. Was that your experience?
Okay, I'm going to quote the director from this, that very first movie. His name is Rob. Rob Vorenkall. And he said, if anyone ever asks you, what are you guys doing? Are you making a movie? You're supposed to say, we're making a mayonnaise commercial. Because then the people will be like, What the hell? And they'll stop watching and then leave you alone. But that first experience, honestly, was so great that that's the reason why I decided I was going to keep going. Being a theater kid and not knowing what it's like to be behind the scenes and all this stuff, not only did I get to work on that film with one little scene and meet all the cool people in it and see what everything was like, I also got to do behind the scenes photography for it because I do own a small photography business here in UP as well. And I got to do that, and it was super cool hanging out with those people. And yeah, I feel like the buzz around a small town is people do want to get involved and they want to see what's going on. And sometimes they will kind of overstep the bounds, but I don't know. It's just because it's something curious that most people don't see in a small town. Most films are made in bigger cities and things like that. Yeah. At least definitely not in the UP. There's not much going on here.
Well, you're about to change that, I think. My guest is Kayla Kelly. She's an actress based in the UP. And she joins me here on Nightlight tonight, talking about some of the movies she made in her career. You just did a film that was in this new film festival in Madison, and your friend Kirk Krause was on the show a few weeks ago to talk about it. It was called The Last Rung on the Ladder, and it played here in Madison. And after you, in Hour 2, Rob Thomas wrote about it. He writes for the Capital Times, and he wrote about that festival. That was a Stephen King program called Dollar Baby. So you got to be in a short film based on source material by Stephen King. That must have been cool. Was that a good experience?
That was a wonderful experience. I can't say enough about the people that came together to make this thing. It's a really intricate sort of program. It has so many rules and there's so much that goes on with this. But if you are a Dollar Baby recipient, you get to make a Stephen King story into a short film. And Stephen King even gets to watch it, which is, well, it belongs to Stephen King technically, so he watches it. It's for nonprofits, so then it can't really be put out there for the masses to see, at least not at this time, but the Dollar Baby program is ending, so rules may change, so we'll see. There's some upcoming festivals that people can go and watch this film at if they would like, and I think it's May 10th, and Kurt was telling me, the MLC Awards in Green Bay or De Pere. I think, did I say May 10th? I meant to say August 10th.
August 10th. Okay.
Yeah. But it was really cool because I got to work with these people who had let me have so much creative reign and with my character. And it was a really depressing story. It's not so much like many other Stephen King films, which are straight horror. This one is really more of, it's about morals and learning, that family is important and that you should not take them people for granted and things like that, because you can lose, something that means something to you in the blink of an eye. So it's really more of along the Stand By Me sort of line where, it's not quite straight horror, but some scary things happen in it. And it was a lot of fun to bring in some elements from other Stephen King films. We call those like nuggets or Easter eggs. We put those in there. And everybody was so wonderful to work with. So I really, really enjoyed that. And I really hope some of you guys can go see that at some of these upcoming festivals, because it was a joy to work on. It was awesome.
That's really cool. You must be used to shooting in the cold by now, I would imagine, because you did. We had the filmmakers from Northbound on the show a couple months ago. That was filmed in Wisconsin or the UP?
In the UP.
Okay. Yeah. So that's another one. And I saw a couple episodes of that before they were on the show. I don't know if I saw your episode, but there's a lot of snow. Like, do you like filming in the cold, or are you like waiting to get that phone call to go shoot something like in Florida or something?
Would it be bad if I said something of the latter? I don't love the winter. I live in the UP. I'm born and raised here. And somehow I've still never really gotten to fall in love with the snow. I love the way it looks. The first snow is beautiful, but honestly, the cold lasting almost 6 months of the year is really, it's got to go. It's annoying. this past winter, I was not mad that the weather was the way it was.
Same.
Because it was, I was pretty decent. The only thing I missed was like going sledding with the kids. But other than that, you know, no, Northbound is an awesome series too. It's, we're going to, we have season three here coming out shortly, I think in the summer. Yeah. And we're, yeah, it's going to be the explosive finale, if you will.
Very cool.
This is a show that is completely filmed in the UP. It's an apocalyptic series, a post-apocalyptic series. And, you know, it's really something different that you're going to, you know, that you would see in, from Upper Michigan here. It's, how can I put it? It's a series that takes place here after the apocalypse here in the UP, and it's about survival. And there are some good guys, some bad guys. And my character was used to be a bad guy. She's kind of a rebel. She left the bad guys and she's kind of like harboring. She's kind of like a fugitive.
Okay.
She's from her old like bosses and stuff like that. And, but she becomes a good guy and like a lot of things change for her in season three. Her name is Gina. I get to be like a sniper wielding.
Oh, nice.
A good guy, I should say now. Yeah. So it was really, that was a really fun one. It took us a lot of time to get through filming three seasons. I'm in season two and three. So, but you know, the pandemic happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved it because it was the first post-apocalyptic thing I had seen that wasn't in a sweaty dirt desert place. It was like there was snow. I was like, wow, yeah, I don't picture that when I picture the apocalypse, you know.
And there's no zombies, right? No zombies.
My guest is the very talented Kayla Kelly, the award-winning Kayla Kelly, and I will ask her about that when coming up next here on Nightlight. It's great to have you with me on this Wednesday night. Kayla Kelly's here. Rob Thomas is coming up in hour number two. We'll be right back talking more acting on Nightlight.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday evenings from 7 till 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Closing out this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we go to the John and Gordy Show. This week, they talk to comedy musician, artist, and local legend Art Paul Schlosser.
State Street. Where dreams come alive. Everybody's buzzing like bees from a hive.
Yeah.
State Street. I really want to go there. Lots of happy people and a guy in underwear.
How beautiful.
State Street. That great street. That.
That memorable line.
Yes.
The guy in underwear.
Exactly.
We've got Art Paul Schlosser in the studio here on WMDX, the John and Gordy Family Show Extravaganza this morning.
Art, it's good to see you.
Yeah.
You too.
Yeah. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah.
Been a long time.
It has been a long time. Let's get the mic up a little closer to you here.
Do you remember your experience when we were at Triple M? We had you on all morning.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah. It was a long time ago.
But support me on that. You remember that, right?
You do. It's a really small studio.
I remember you guys playing my birthday song a lot.
Yes.
Right?
You love your birthday song. Still love it.
We had you in for an interview, and I think it was supposed to last like 5 minutes or 10 minutes, but you ended up staying about 45 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And it was great.
Was that good or bad?
It wasn't great. We had a manager meeting after that show.
Oh, no.
And then, you know, we got fired the next week. But
oh, I'm sorry.
It wasn't your fault. We invited you in, and, you know, we just let you do your thing, and we thought it was very entertaining.
Yeah, but it was your fault.
Well, it was. No, I'm sorry.
Well, here we are all these years later, and now we've got a different studio, and we're happy to have you in. You are an artist, Art. And, you know, your art and your music come together, and people can enjoy you on State Street here. You're always here, it seems. How long have you been doing this on State Street?
38 years.
Is that right? Wow.
Yep.
How does the city treat you, Art? Are they treating you as though you're the king of State Street?
Yeah, everybody loves me.
Fantastic.
I played in front of the Robert Plant show, and people just were giving me
Just at Breeze, Breeze
out on the sidewalk.
Yeah. No. Oh, on the sidewalk in front of.
Yeah, in the corner.
In front of. So you were at, with Alison Krauss,
the opening
Robert
act.
Plant. You were the opening act.
Well, I could watch the show from the big screen above. That guy,
wow, that's
Robert looks old.
Now you got to you wrote a song. I think the city gave you an award of some sort, didn't they?
Remember?
Didn't you get an award?
I won 10 Mamas.
Yes, yes.
10 area Madison.
You have.
Madison,
okay. What was the last one you won? What was the
song? I don't keep track of them. Yeah. I think me and Chris won one.
Yes, what was that one?
For best children's song.
Yes.
For Zero to Hero.
Yes, Zero to Hero.
Zero to Hero.
Yeah. Do you want to play that, or?
I can try to play part of it.
All right.
All right, just a little bit of it.
Chris keeps
just
all the lyrics in
the Well, now, is this the song that also made it on Jimmy Kimmel? You had a song that, or some?
Or
Jimmy Fallon?
Jimmy Fallon played Have a Peanut Butter Sandwich, 10 seconds of it, and said, don't play this song. Don't play this song.
And that went off. Everybody went and checked out the song, right?
Yeah, it went viral.
Yeah, that one's doing really well.
Yeah, that's great.
But that's my most popular song, though, on Spotify is I'm a Chicken.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you favor us with one? What would you like to play? Just a little bit.
I would like to play one called You're the Best.
Oh, okay. All right.
I want people to.
You got a kazoo.
I want people to feel good. And as I sing, if they can sing, they can sing along with me to their friends.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well,
all right. What's it called again?
You're the best.
You're the best.
All right. Now, if you're at work, you know, just remember you can sing to your friend in the cubicle next to you.
I really like you. Oh, yes, it's true. I like everything you do. You're really cool. You're the best. You're the best. You're the best. You're the best. I like your smile. I like your style. You're really one funky, groovy child. You're the best. You're the best. You're the best. You're the best. Nothing like flattery to get you somewhere. I'll tell you what you want to hear. I'll make it loud and clear. Everybody sing to your friend now.
Okay, here we go.
You're the best. You're the best. You're the best. You're the best. You're the best, everybody out there.
All right, Art Paul.
Okay. Oh man, that is the way you personalized it. You know,
such a
warm feeling.
I'm stunned.
I sing it for everybody else. people come up to me and
it's great stuff, Art.
Play a dedication song, and then I do the generic dedication song.
Listen, people love you in this city.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, and that you really. You know, you put it all out there, all the time on State Street. People can find you here just about every day, right? Somewhere.
Oh, you got 1 minute.
All right. Okay. thank you for throwing the time cues out there.
Oh, wait, let's get a painting. Let's show one of the paintings on our video.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
Here, hold it up to the camera. Here, let's show it to the camera.
Here. Right there. This is some of Art's.
In replay, you get to check this out.
All right. Isn't that something?
That's from this year, 2024.
Art Paul, we're running out of time here, but
we're gonna be back with Art Paul and read some of why Jesus is better than Batman.
All right, Art Paul, coming up.
I'm wearing feathers. Those are my clothes. I'm not naked, you know.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.